asked. Ask Maxim, Peg said. He's the cowboy. I smiled, their banter reminding me of flying with my friends. Though this felt different. In Skyward Flight, our banter, although genuine, had always had an edge. We'd been a few bold fighters facing overwhelming odds. We'd gone into each fight knowing it might be the one where we lost someone we loved. The broadsiders didn't have the same sense to them. They were relaxed as they ran through more sprints. When one got something wrong, they all laughed it off. Skyward Flight hadn't done that, because there, if one of us kept screwing up, it would get everyone killed. Was this what it felt like to relax? Scud. Listening to them, I realized I really didn't know what it felt like to just live without worrying about a bomb annihilating my entire civilization one night while I slept, without fearing that my friends wouldn't be coming home tomorrow, or more recently, without wondering if I'd be discovered as an imposter. As they practiced, I glanced over the landscape. Once you got past the fact that this place could literally consume your memories and identity, it was beautiful. An endless open sky, cast faintly pink-violet, interrupted by floating islands. Each fragment was a different biome, inviting a new adventure. And beyond that, the light burst. Though it was still distant, today I felt something drawing me toward it. Chet thought we'd need to go right up close to it to finish the Path of Elders, and looking into that full light now, I knew it was true. I'd walk the path, but at the end, I'd face them. Whatever else happened here, that was my destination. I shook myself out of that trance-like state and patched through on the comm to Peg, looking for a distraction. Hey, I said as she finished her sprints, could I get more details on your plan? How exactly is me fighting the pirate champion going to help you win the superiority base? She was quiet for a moment, seeming to consider. Finally, she answered, pulling her shuttle up beside my ship.
You know about my past. The others told you.
You were chief security officer at Shorehold, I said. The superiority treated you dirty, not allowing your kids to leave with you when your time was up.
Correct, Peg said. So I grew a few handshells about that, I'll tell you. And I wasn't the only one. The base had been losing people for years. The factions hadn't grown yet, but there were plenty of smaller bands, with a ship or two roving around out here. It was a big deal when you left, Chet said. Everyone heard about it. A high officer defecting? Gathering all the dissidents, raiders, and wanderers to raise up a giant pirate armada?
Yeah, well, Peg said, it wasn't enough.
I failed back then. And my supposed giant armada shattered into the factions. Still, I've been thinking about it these last 3 years, considering what I did wrong, planning.
I nodded, thoughtful. Wasn't Shiver with you back at the base?
Yeah, about a third of it defected when I did, Peg said. They form the bulk of the pirates. Shiver's not the only broadsider who left with me. There are a bunch of us, like Rayzed and Guntua. And I almost had more, almost got the entire base to up in revolt.
Their failure to do so smacks of cowardice, Chet said.
No, Peg said. No, that's not it. I understand them, Chet. They're not cowards. Just ordinary people trying to live in a difficult place. Back when I was security officer, I was the one who installed the non-lethal weapons on our ships. My argument being that we couldn't afford to throw away the ships the malcontents had stolen. Truth is, though, I grew Eurechas. I knew those dissidents were just like us. I didn't want to be in the business of shooting them down.
So wait, I said. You're saying that the superiority forces in here, they use non-lethal weapons too?
Yup, Peg said. Pretty much everyone does. We have this understanding. None of us want to be killing each other.
So civilized, Chet said. I approve.
Well, Peg said, the high ups in the somewhere, they'd rather it be deadly in here. Fortunately, they're far away. Regardless, Spin, this is important to understand. Those people at Shorehold, they almost joined me when I left. They want to escape, but they're scared of the superiority and of the officers that are still loyal. If we give them a nudge, prove that my force is stronger, they'll join us. I'm certain of it.
That explained a lot. The pirates didn't want to lose equipment to damage because repairs were difficult for them, and the superiority forces weren't zealots or loyalists. They didn't want to die to defend a stupid mining base, but they had to make a good showing for their superiors. So non-lethal weapons were used all around. I found it interesting how humane things became once the people far up the command chain, the ones who didn't have to bleed for the decisions they made, couldn't force everyone into line. I don't understand why the pirates have these little squabbles and do meaningless raids against each other, though, I said. If I were in charge of one of these pirate factions, I wouldn't waste time with champions or duels. I'd raid a group smaller than mine, freeze their ships, then steal the lot of them. In a few weeks, I'd be queen of all the pirates.
You really are terrifying sometimes, kid, Peg replied.
A question occurred to me. Do you guys have, like, golden tankards or anything? I mean, I know we don't drink here, but I've always wanted a golden tankard. Or maybe one made out of bone. The stories mention ones made from the skulls of one's enemies. But it seems like the drink would leak out the eye holes. Unless your enemies have no eyes, I guess. Peg had fallen silent. Oh, maybe that last part had been a little much. I was trying to get better at this sort of thing. I should probably leave skulls out of conversations.
I'm glad to finally meet a human who lives up to the stories, Peg said. But no, we're not going to be giving you any tankards made of skulls.
Still, I said, Chet's right. It's remarkably civilized in here. I have trouble accepting that nobody has ruined it.
That's because you spent your life fighting to the death, Peg said. We have a different problem. You feel yourself dribbling away each day, Chet agreed. Having something to do is important. The sparring, the duels. These invigorating activities give the pirates purpose, don't they?
Yeah,
Peg said.
And no one wants to ruin what they have. That's part of the problem. Every time I pitch the idea of seizing Shorehold, the pirates get frightened, unnerved. They like the way things are. With six different pirate factions, there's always a raid to plan, a ship to repair, a mission to execute, or territory to defend. It's what they want.
But you want something more, I said.
Yes, Peg admitted. Maybe I'm a little too much like you. A little too much like the people outside. I can't feel safe as long as the superiority is there. At any moment, they could send an enormous force through the portal and crush us with lethal weapons and swarms of drones. My people won't be safe in here until I control that portal. Until I can lock it on our side. And then we can undermine superiority acclivity stone production, starve their forces on the other side. Pay back for what they did to me and mine.
There was an encouraging vengefulness in her tone. I approved. The others were playing games, and Peg wanted to protect that. But she knew real danger, real killing. She still hadn't explained how the pirate champion related to all of this, but I let it die for now. Because up ahead, I saw our destination at last. A lonely fragment covered in ancient structures. It was time. Chapter 24. We swooped down toward the fragment, which was bigger than many of the others I'd seen so far. It's huge, I noted to Chet as we skimmed along, scouting for dangers. IR scans indicated no body heat signatures, though I'd learned not to be careless about that.
Indeed, he said. I now understand why some are so much bigger than others. They've been growing for longer.
This, Deliz said over the comm.
here. I was here.
Again, it was more than she normally said, and got Shiver excited. I was focused, however, on the ruins I could make out at the fragment's center, and I navigated toward them.
Yeah, I remember this place, Peg said. We visited it when it first drifted into our region a few years back.
That's right, Captain,
Maxime said.
So why are we here again, Spin?
Historical investigations, I said. Chet here is an archaeologist.
A right noble profession, my good man,
Chet said.
Ancient artifacts can tell us much about ourselves.
I guess,
Maxime said.
But leave it be, Maxime,
Peg cut him off.
Their reasons are their own. The rest of us will search for salvage while we're here.
I narrowed my eyes. Peg didn't seem the type to let our reasons be our own.
Spin and I will need time to study those ruins directly at the center, Chet said. I'm circling them on your monitors.
Liz is vibrating uncomfortably, Shiver said over the comm. Though she's excited, I think she doesn't want to land. She feels anxious. Maybe the two of us should stay up and keep watch.
Fine by me, Peg said. Maxime and I will stick near, Spin, while you do your archaeology.
Our group landed in a ruined courtyard, while the two resonants stayed in the air. There wasn't a lot left of most of the ruins. Fallen walls, the outlines of buildings, a few somewhat intact stone structures. I popped the canopy and climbed out, meeting Peg on the ground.
This place is old, she said. Not a lot of wind in here and no rain, so things don't weather much. If something looks this bad, it's probably seen thousands of years.
Chet and I shared a glance, then started toward one of the mostly intact structures, helmets under our arms.
Doesn't look too promising, Captain, Maxime muttered from behind. This place must have been picked over hundreds of times.
Agreed, Peg said, but keep growing Delins just in case. We're here to keep our promise to Spin.
I remembered the structure ahead. It had been injected into my mind by the previous step on the path. We walked up to it, and directly inside I found my first surprise. The wall behind the small foyer had a faded old mural on it, and the figures it depicted were most certainly human.
Amazing,
Chet breathed. He rushed up to it and leaned in close.
Our own people, Miss Nightshade. All these years, I never found any ruins that I could identify as human.
I couldn't make out much of the mural, just some figures holding baskets, maybe.
I could not guess at the culture,
Chet whispered. He reached out to the mural, then paused, perhaps not wanting to touch it and further contribute to its degradation.
To be perfectly honest, I don't remember much about where we came from, our homeworld. I must have once known.
Earth, I said. Humankind left there a few centuries before you were even born. It's lost now, vanished. Together, we moved farther into the structure. The roof had long since fallen in, so we didn't lack for light. And from the refuse on the floor, it seemed the place had been ransacked over the years and had possibly been in a firefight. I felt an eerie, haunted sense. There were so many signs of life, but no people. We found the portal in the last room, built straight into the wall, the characteristic flowing lines carved into it. But this one was cracked down the middle, broken. Would it still work? I glanced at Chet, who lingered in the doorway.
Courage, he said, stepping forward. I am an explorer. It is what I decided to be. I can face these secrets.
He joined me beside the portal. I touched it, opened up my cytonic senses, and sought answers. At first, nothing happened. This portal appeared to be damaged, unusable. But I pushed a little more, using the subtle care I'd been practicing, and yes, I could feel them inside. The memories. Everything around me faded to flimsy transparency. I remained in the ruins physically. I could feel the broken wall beside me. But
but they had been overlaid by a vision of the belt as it had existed long ago. Chet breathed out, turning around. The light burst was tiny in the distance, little more than a star. The sky was dark, and I counted maybe 24 fragments floating in the expanse. So this seemed to be the ancient past, like the previous vision. Our current fragment was much smaller in the past, plus it was empty of structures save for the portal, which stood free and whole, not cracked. It was smaller too, lending further credence to the theory that the portals grew a little, with memories, whenever Cytonics used them as transfer points between dimensions. Moments after the vision began, people popped into existence directly in front of the portal. I stepped away from them in surprise. Humans? They were talking, though I couldn't understand the language.
"Can you make out any of that?" Chet asked.
"Afraid not," I said, circling them. They wore robes, and something was kind of familiar about the headdress one was wearing. I once saw a drawing of Gilgamesh in a book from Old Earth, and he wore clothing and a beard like that. I pointed to one of the men. Maybe they're from somewhere near his civilization? Chet hopped back from the portal as something else materialized in front of it. Stones? Yes, a pile of building materials. People began using them to construct something. "This wasn't their first visit here," I said, feeling it was true. "There were sensations to the vision, not just sights. They want to build a shrine, I think." Chet and I watched as time sped up and walls sprang into existence. The people became blurs, erecting the very structure that Chet and I were standing in. They carved delicate art into the walls, then painted everything with vibrant colors. Why put something so nice in this strange place? Time slowed again, and the humans, it seemed the construction had taken weeks, maybe months, gathered together out front. Chet and I joined them and saw another fragment swinging closer. This bore a group of people in vibrant red robes. They had pale violet skin, growths like horns, and pure white hair. People from Redon, Alanik's homeworld. "I know those people," I told Chet. "They are the Urdael. The one I met said they'd known humans in the past."
"How far in the past?" Chet asked, rubbing his chin. "These humans wear ancient clothing."
"Scud," I said. "Could this be first contact? The first time humans met with aliens?" I thought that didn't happen until we were in the space age. Except Hesho had also told me that the Kitsun people had met with humans in Japan centuries before either achieved space travel. They'd traveled using cytonics, like these, it seemed. In front of us, the humans greeted the Urdael, who stepped over to our fragment, and I realized this probably wasn't first contact. The two groups looked familiar with one another, so their first encounters must have happened earlier. Now the humans had built some kind of meeting hall. It wasn't a shrine, I realized as we followed the people in. It was a place where they sat together at tables, trying to figure out one another's languages, perhaps? Yes. They were writing words, gesturing, explaining to one another. Time sped up again, and I counted dozens of meetings in a matter of minutes, each time the two fragments aligned. I think I even saw some Urdael visit Earth through the portal, while some humans left on the Urdael fragment. Then, the humans stopped coming. An alignment happened, and the Urdael arrived, but no humans were there to meet them. That occurred several more times, then eventually, the Urdael stopped visiting as well. "So," I said, "what does this tell us about our powers?" Chet frowned, inspecting the mural in the vision, which was colorful and vibrant then.
"Alien species began meeting in the nowhere, mixing. But then it ended. Why?"
That had happened with the Kitsun too, hadn't it? Hesho said their cytonics had vanished for some reason. As I was considering this, a woman appeared out of the wall. She was middle-aged, with tan skin and colorful robes. I followed her as she walked out of the building, then over to the nearby edge of the fragment. There she settled down, looking out at the expanse. Time passed, months, maybe years, and still she sat there, as if waiting for something. Finally, she rose and walked past us. "Who are you?" I asked, and the impression returned. "I am the only one who was not killed by the beast." Wait, had she replied? I followed her back into the building as she walked up to the portal. There she rested her hand, and lines in the stone began to spiral and flourish out at her touch. "I feel your questions," the impression said. "It is my talent. Though I do not know any of you, I leave my answers in the portal." "What happened?" I asked. "To the Cytonics?" "A beast, raised by an alien species who had technological marvels." I saw something in my mind then, an assembly of thousands of Cytonics, of 100 different races, gathering to fight. Something dark, something rising from a blackness, but with a set of piercing white eyes. "It destroyed them," the Cytonic said. "We fought, we won, but the price was so high." "How?" I asked. "How did you win?" "We made it become real," she said. "I do not know how. I survived, and those who did know how were consumed." She lowered her hand. She'd inscribed her memories into the portal, which were now reaching me somehow. Chet walked up behind me.
"Time is unnatural in the nowhere, but this is strange even by its standards," he said. "I have no idea what to make of this."
I felt the vision begin to fade. It was coming to the end of its memories. "Wait," I said to the woman. "You kept your memories while living in the nowhere. How?"
"Why would I lose my memories?" the impression returned.
"That's an attribute of this place," I said.
"Not in our time. You face a beast like ours."
"Not one beast," I said. "Thousands, millions of them."
"Then you are doomed."
"No, there has to be a way."
"Find the memories of the man who will come. Find the memories of the man named Jason Wright."
Then a different sort of impression came upon me, as had happened during the previous vision. I understood it better because I was stronger in my powers, better at listening. It felt like dozens, maybe hundreds of minds reaching to me from within the stone.
"Further," they encouraged me. "Even further."
They presented for me something like a wall. I forced my mind against it and could not get through.
"Stronger, but not harder."
"I don't understand," I sent.
"You are not a tool to strike, not a rock to bludgeon."
"What am I?" I asked.
"You are a star."
And a light kindled inside me, a pure white light, the power of the nowhere. I became a flaming sword, and when I shoved, my mind pierced the barrier.
"Good. Good. Continue."
A location popped into my mind. Another portal? It was in what appeared to be a large building, filled with boxes. I frowned.
"Scrud,"
Chet said. "You recognize the place?" I asked, turning toward him.
"Indeed I do, Spencer," he said, then took a deep breath. "That, I'm afraid, is the portal in the middle of Shorehold, seat of superiority power in this region of the Belt."
Chapter 25. There would be time later to think over what I'd seen. For now, I burst through the open doorway of the ruins, searching for Peg. I didn't have to hunt for long. She was leaning against a crumbling wall just outside, arms held before her, claws out. Even when lounging, the tennis eye looked predatory.
"You saw something," she said. "You're Cytonic, aren't you? Both of you."
Yes, I said, glancing to Chet.
Do you know about the Path of Elders?
He asked Peg.
Never heard that term before, she said. But these old ruins, they have their own memories. Anyone can feel that. And I've been told about cytonics.
She pushed off the wall and stood upright.
This has to do with your mission? The one that's so important that you two had to steal a ship from us?
Yes, I told Peg. And there's more. Tell me about your plans to assault Shorehold. She narrowed her eyes at me. Please, Peg, I said. I need to know. If the pirates are afraid to fight the superiority, if they don't want to risk the good things they have now, how do we persuade them?
We, Peg said. You're joining in?
I glanced at Chet, who nodded. Provisionally, yes, I said. Peg grinned.
Words. Well, we don't need to persuade the pirates, not individually. We merely need to get my sons to follow me again. Your sons, Chet said. They turned against you. Yeah, Peg said. They lead the two largest pirate factions. I'll admit, I didn't expect both of my sons to grow enough mullins to rebel. After we all left Shorehold the first time, I tried to get everyone to attack it. We had a small initial clash, but our people were frightened by that and disorganized. When my coalition collapsed, my sons took away some of my strongest forces to start their factions. Make some mother proud.
Proud? That they rebelled?
Exactly, she said. They were incredibly bold, overthrowing their own mother. They were barely adults. Ah, it was great. But it's inconvenient, so we have to win them back. My eldest, Grem, has been champion for a year now. Leads the faction called the Jolly Rogers. An Earth term, no?
I believe so, Chet said.
Well, you'll probably get to meet my son's forces soon. The moment word of your skill reaches them, I suspect Grem will send a raiding party to attack us. They'll be growing Delans to know the truth, and I'll expect you to show them.
I'm eager for it, I said.
I doubt Grem will join the raid, but afterward, I can demand a contest between you and him, and he'll accept. I know my son, and though he's the best pilot among us, he's nothing compared to you. If you defeat him, he will be forced to grow the Tageo.
Which means? I asked.
A very rare fruit, meaning he feels submissive to his parents. If you defeat him, he will listen to me again.
You sure about that?
Absolutely, Peg said. It is our way.
I didn't point out that she'd been surprised by their betrayal, so I had my doubts, but I was willing to give it a try.
What about his brother? Chet asked. Sam leads a different faction, she said. He'll return to me too, if my faction claims the championship. Trust me.
Yeah, that sounded too convenient to me. There was more to this. Peg still had her secrets. She watched me a moment longer, then started through the ruins toward our ships.
We should be returning, she said. I expect a raid at any time, and I don't want to leave the others too short-staffed.
Well, I asked Chet as she wandered off. Did you know we'd have to get into Shorehold itself?
I suspected, he admitted. The portal there is one of the largest and oldest in the region. I had hoped it wouldn't be necessary, but at least we have a path forward.
Assuming we can trust Peg's plan.
She seems to trust it, he said. Come, we should return to our ship. You remember what happened last time after we saw one of these?
Yeah, our entire fragment had been destroyed in a collision. Perhaps it had been a coincidence, but I found myself hurrying after Chet just in case. We gathered Maxim, and soon the four of us were lifting off to join the Resonance and start back toward our home base.
You two appear unusually solemn,
Embot said as we fell into formation.
It worked, I assume? You again saw the past?
Indeed, AI, Chet said. We kind of contacted a cytonic person in the past.
Embot said. Clarification, please. She could feel my questions somehow, I explained, in her time, and left answers for me. Or maybe she just heard the general curiosity of all who came after her. Either way, I think we know what happened to the Kitson Cytonics, and why there was a sudden dearth of contact between Earth and aliens after some initial interactions in ancient times.
Really? What?
War, I said. With a Delver.
We don't know it was a Delver, Chet said, but it did seem to have been some kind of Delver-like entity. The Cytonics of the galaxy, those that had contacted one another, gathered to fight it, and not many survived.
They fought a single entity, Embot said.
And won, Chet said, by somehow making it real. But there were great casualties.
And we now face more than one, Embot said.
Way more than one.
Yes, I said, leaning forward in my seat. There was something else. No loss of memories in the nowhere back then. It's a more recent development.
It's connected, Chet said, and the answers are at Sherhold. Some of them, at least.
In the memories of a man named Jason Wright, I said, frowning.
Jason Wright, Embot said.
Superiority Historical Archives list him as the human who initiated first contact with the greater galaxy after accidentally discovering he was Cytonic. He kicked off the expansion of humankind into the galaxy and indirectly caused the first human war of conquest. I nodded absently, thinking about that ancient Cytonic who had communicated with us. The feelings of exhaustion and loneliness that had permeated her. I felt that something had sparked inside me, or, well, the spark had always been there. Now it burned brighter. Chet, I said, do your powers feel different?
Indeed, he said. They talked to me about using my mind to see around myself. I feel that with practice, I won't just have an instinct for the fragments. I might be able to see into buildings, or around corners, or, well, it seems incredible.
I learned something else, I said softly, but I don't know what it means yet. You are a star.
Hey,
Maxime's voice said over the comm.
The rest of you registering that figure down there, at my 9?
Odd to see someone, Shiver said, out so openly. Not hiding. If we were recruiting, they'd be in trouble.
I checked out the window. A solitary figure stood on a ridge on a distant fragment. It appeared to be a Heklo. The distance was far enough that it made it difficult to tell. And though I couldn't see for certain, I could feel a coldness and a pressure against my mind. I was positive the figure had white, glowing eyes.
You feel that? Chet asked.
Yeah, I said. It's one of them. At least they didn't find a way to destroy the fragment this time.
Still worries me, Chet said. I had hoped that we'd lost them these last few weeks. It is difficult for the Delvers to project attention this far out. But now they have located us again. Hopefully this doesn't lead to difficulties.
I shivered. Soon we were past it, the figure dwindling in the distance. My comm started flashing, though, a direct call from Peg. Yes, Captain? I said.
What did you see? She asked. In those ruins.
Why? I asked her.
Something feels odd, she said, about that figure we just passed. About this entire excursion. I answered your questions about my plans. Now answer mine. What did you see?
We saw the past. I admitted. Memories, like you said. We're investigating a way to fight the Delvers, and we got a message from a woman who encountered something like them long ago.
Fight the Delvers, Peg said.
Yeah, I said.
If it's any consolation, Chet said, we would prefer to find some way to placate or reconcile with them. For now, however, we must continue our quest. And visit the portal at Sherhold
to find the memories hidden therein.
Well, our goals overlap, Peg said, so I can't say I'm sorry about that part. But fighting the Delvers, I suppose if you're cytonic, maybe you can manage it.
I knew this one Dione in the security force. They left soon after arriving because they kept changing to look like different people. The heads of the superiority pulled them out the moment they heard of it.
Changing shape? I'd never done anything like that.
A cytonic talent, Chet said, projecting illusions into the minds of others, making oneself appear different, even feel different. It works on anyone in here, though I've heard that in the somewhere, it only works on other cytonics.
Actually, I felt a chill. I had heard of that happening. Someone had done it to my father, making him see the wrong things. I was coming to understand more and more that different cytonics, they could do different things. I could hear the stars and teleport. Chet could extend his lifespan and see great distances with his powers. Peg dropped off the line and Embot had a chance to speak.
Why didn't the Delvers grab one of the members of your team and turn them into a glowing-eyed thing? He asked. Peg and Maxime were closer to you than the Heklo. Gathering a large number of people together repels them, Chet said, particularly if those people see themselves as a group. My theory is that the Delvers need someone who is as alone as possible, and someone who doesn't view themselves as belonging.
I dwelled on what we'd seen, and found it more difficult to make sense of it all this time. In fact, I had to admit that as we neared home, I was glad when a more mundane danger cropped up. An emergency announcement that a group of starfighters from an enemy faction was approaching the Broadsider base at high speed. Chapter 26. As soon as our base came into view, I hit my overburn and pulled ahead of the others. I could see the destructor fire spraying through the nowhere, beautiful and bright. My body came alive, and my mind, which had been reeling from what I'd experienced, snapped to full alert. This was what I'd been made for. "Hang on, Chet," I said, and we screamed into the fight, flying to the sound of wind on wings and boosters roaring. It had taken us precious minutes to arrive, and I counted three of our fighters already locked up, drifting aimlessly. Scud! With 10 total fighters and the five of us gone, the remaining two stragglers were facing overwhelming odds. Embot highlighted enemy ships, friendlies, and downed friendlies on my proximity display. By the markings on the enemy fighters, these were from the Jolly Rogers, the faction led by Peg's son Grem, and the one she'd expected to send a raid to test my abilities. Excellent. Embot suggested a few targets, circling starfighters that were flying slower than the others, and one that had just taken a hit to its shield. As much as I wanted a challenge, and to go for the stronger enemies first, that could lead to my team getting overwhelmed. So, steeling myself, I took one of Embot's suggestions and swooped in behind a pair of fighters that were tailing Gibbsy, one of our pilots from Flintlock Flight. The two enemy pilots barely responded to my arrival. One swung a little to the side so that if I fired, I'd risk my stray shots hitting my ally. For a brief second, I was confused. That was it? I'm used to fighting superiority ships that recognize me as an enemy ace, I realized. They highlight me in battle, devoting extra resources to me. But this was my first time fighting rival pirates. They had come to test me, but they didn't seem to expect too much. Time to send them my calling card. I sniped the one who had moved to the side, each of my shots landing with precision. The pilot belatedly panicked, pulling up, and slammed square into my next shot. You always want to pull up. It's instinct, even in space when there's no ground below. I buzzed around the now frozen enemy ship, firing at the second ship tailing Gibbsy, which was the ship that Embot had highlighted as having a weakened shield. My shots rattled the enemy pilot, who broke off and dodged to the right. "You," I whispered, "shall know the taste of my steel.
and I shall know the taste of your blood. Yes, those kinds of phrases still slipped out now and then. No, I wasn't embarrassed. They helped me focus. I wove after the ship as they dodged around the fragment. They crossed underneath, with me tight behind them, then came up around the other side on a pivot. I could sense their increasing panic as I used my light lance to swing around more quickly, my grav caps easily compensating for the G-forces. My prey cut one direction, then the other. It was an ostensibly smart move. If they jerked around randomly, I couldn't anticipate where they'd be. Except, as with pulling up, people who think they're acting randomly rarely are. Cobb had drilled this into my brain time and time again. Instead of random motions, we practiced sequences of maneuvers deliberately designed to frustrate enemies. Training always trumped haphazardness. My prey jerked back and forth, and I'm sure it felt random to them. But I picked them off with three expert shots anyway. Chet let out a whoop, and I left the enemy ship frozen and swerved into the firefight. Here, I got in an admittedly lucky shot on a ship that MBOT highlighted, but I wasn't going to complain. Three kills in under 5 minutes? Scud, it felt good to be back in the cockpit, fighting alongside friends again, doing what I was meant to do. Nearby, I noticed some of the enemy ships forming up into a proper line. Cutlass Flight, I said, track my position. I'm about to give you a group of juicy targets. The four enemy ships spun around, orienting toward me. Working together was a good idea, but these obviously hadn't drilled on ideal ship distance. As I'd recently taught the broadsiders, when you flew in a formation, you wanted to be just far enough away from one another to protect against IMP blasts. I went barreling toward them, slamming my overburn. They landed a few shots on me, which was fine. As I darted through the middle of the quartet, I hit my IMP. They reacted too slowly, and I caught three of the four, which MBOT obligingly painted on the display for me, dropping their shields. As I'd suggested, Peg and the members of Cutlass Flight focused on these ships. Sprays of destructor fire lit the air behind me, and I found myself grinning. The fighting here reminded me of something. Training with the holographic projectors, I realized. That was the last time I flew without fearing for my life.
That was quite the stunt spin, Peg said over the comm. Can't decide if you're growing mullins or hemels.
That's nothing, Captain, I said, spinning into evasive maneuvers as someone took shots at me. You should see me do something like that when we're fighting for our lives. It's way more stupid then.
I can imagine, she said. You need a wingmate?
Nah, you and Maxime might want to go help Gibbsy, though. He's somehow picked up two more tails. I still had my own tail. MBOT helpfully pointed out this was the one ship from a moment ago that I hadn't IMP'd, which meant they had a shield and I didn't. Huh. They were sticking to me pretty well. In fact, a couple bolts of blue destructor light grazed my canopy, inches from connecting. Scud. This one was actually good. My grin widened. I slammed on my overburn, sat back in my seat, and really got into it. There was no way I'd be able to restore my shields to dual them properly. That required precious seconds sitting still. So instead, I focused on outflying my enemy. The next few minutes were a glorious chase through the battlefield, swerving and swooping, light lancing around fragments, buzzing the broadsider base. That tail stayed on me, as if proving a point. They soon left off shooting, though. Waiting for the perfect shot, eh? I thought. Well, I'm not going to give you one. I pulled up for a while, soaring into the pink-white sky. Then I turned and dove. My new ship's grav caps absorbed the worst of the G-forces, but I was still slammed with them as I accelerated downward. That had me grinning. Yes, G-forces suck, but at this point, they were an old friend. All the blood pushing to the back of my body, threatening to claim my eyesight, then my consciousness. I soared past my tail, then pulled up at just the right moment. A glance at the monitor showed me Chet's head rolling on his neck. He shook himself, coming alert. Seemed I'd knocked him out in that maneuver. I'd have to be a little more careful. Yet even despite all of that, my enemy kept with me. They were good. So I roared back into the snarl of fighting ships, and then started blasting an enemy ship that had been gunning for Shiver, knocking out its shields. I then took to the side, drawing a bead on another ship, and fired and locked it up. My tail finally unloaded on me, firing wildly instead of waiting for the right moment. Great. Now I just... My ship jolted. The control panel went dark and the controls locked up. I found myself hovering forward at a steady pace, nothing working, as that enemy ace buzzed my ship. Scud! I'd been hit! I checked Chet's vitals on my monitor. He was fine by the numbers. So I sat back in my seat, then laughed.
Spencer? Embot asked. Oh my! Is the stress causing your emotions to erupt irrationally?
Oh, I felt that now. What do I say? Let's see.
I'm great, I said, wiping my eyes.
No, I need the correct words.
I stretched forward in my seat, trying to get a visual on that ace. Fighting was fun, but knowing there was someone in here who could match me, that was even more exciting.
Ah, Embot said, I've got it. Spencer, feel better, please.
Okay, I said, smiling. I already do.
Success. I'm going to remember that one.
Chet, how are you feeling? I asked him.
Enthused, he said, his voice wan. But nauseous and embarrassed. I fear I lost consciousness earlier.
It happens to all of us, I said. No need to be embarrassed. You should have seen me on my first days in the centrifuge back home.
Well, he said, I know you've said I was a pilot, but those experiences are lost to me. My current disposition is one of profound respect for the ground, I must admit.
I'll try to avoid towing you into any more of these, I said. Embot, who was that enemy pilot?
Peg's son, Grem, Embot said. She indicated he wouldn't join the fight, but by the markings on that ship, she was wrong.
So I'd had my first brush with the champion. I grinned. Though he'd beaten me, that hadn't been a true duel. I'd lost my shield fighting his companions. He would see my true potential when we faced off. How are you, Embot? I asked, turning and scanning the sky, trying to gauge the progress of the battle. That hit didn't fry you or anything?
Fortunately, Embot said, the modifications we made to insulate my core systems appear to have worked.
I'm glad.
It honestly wouldn't take too much effort to insulate all of the systems, he continued, so we won't get locked up in fights like this.
What would be the sport in that? Chet asked.
Sport, Embot said. It's not a game.
It is, though, I said. As long as everyone plays by the same rules, nobody has to die.
From what I understand of the interactions between sapient beings, Embot said, someone is eventually going to seek an extra advantage. I'm shocked it hasn't happened already, regardless of what Peg indicated.
Maybe, I said. You ever study small group battles between tribes of early humans?
No.
You should. I think you'd be surprised by what kinds of rules a society will follow when the stakes are different. Smaller groups of hunter-gatherers on old Earth had rarely engaged in lethal combat. Their numbers had been too small, their communities too tight-knit. Yes, occasionally someone had died during their conflicts, but mostly the battles had been about boasting and intimidation. Cobb had used this lesson to indicate that human nature wasn't to fight and kill, which was why we needed to drill and train. But now I found something liberating in the idea that flying, the thing I loved, didn't have to only be about killing. It could be about proving myself to myself. Behind, the remaining four enemy ships decided to pull out. Cutlass Flight's timely return had let us win the day. I waited, pensive,
as Peg and her son negotiated terms for the return of their disabled ships. They then began reactivating those vessels, a process that would take a few minutes. Maxime finally arrived to fetch me, hauling my sorry rear back to the base, where the ground crews waited with some of the pilots who had already landed. A set of docking light lances pulled me down, and I hit the manual release on my canopy, then cranked it open. As Chet and I climbed out, I braced myself for a lecture. I could hear Cobb's voice ranting about how reckless I'd been in that fight. He always drilled good behavior, even when doing simulations. Instead, I climbed out to furious cheers and applause, led by Peg herself, who, instead of berating me, grabbed me in an enveloping hug as I dropped to the ground.
4 kills, she shouted, and 3 assists. Kid, you practically won that fight on your own.
The Jolly Rogers were sent running, Maxime said. You have no idea how good that feels.
We have our chance, Peg said.
Graham was impressed. He's willing to duel you officially tomorrow.
The others cheered again. Scud, I'd been shot down and they were cheering me? And her son thought I was worthy? I grinned widely. How long had it been since I'd been this, well, excited after a fight? How long since I'd heard such joy from my flightmates? Last time I could remember was when I saved the DDF base from annihilation by grabbing the bomb. But those cheers had had an edge, a tension. Those had been cheers of relief. These people were simply happy. I let their enthusiasm infuse me. It was an incredible feeling, and it was merely the beginning, because tomorrow, I was going to become pirate champion and give Peg her chance at uniting the factions. Interlude. Floating. I became partially aware, not awake, but aware. I was in the place where I had no shape, no senses other than my cytonic ones. I remembered lying down in my own room at the Broadsider base after the skirmish. It had been a full day. I'd fallen asleep. And now I searched outward, as I'd done on other nights, seeking, wishing. Jorgen. I tried to find him, but felt like I was screaming into an empty void. I couldn't feel anything, like I was building a bonfire in a dark place, but with each new log, the increased light only reaffirmed that the blackness extended into infinity. I'd failed at this often enough recently that I nearly faded into unconsciousness. I had important work ahead of me. I would need to get my rest. And yet, something felt off about my experiences lately in this sleeping realm. Yes, this was wrong. I hadn't been able to see it before, but with a few more test shouts, I thought I picked out what was wrong here. My mental shouts were vanishing too quickly, as if I wasn't screaming into a void so much as into pillows. Was someone blocking me? Scud, was that why I hadn't been able to find Jorgen? I growled. Well, I made the mental equivalent of a growl, as one does. My soul sparked in the darkness. I pressed forward through the void, feeling, yes, a dampening, like a cloud all around me, invisible. In the strange ways of the nowhere, it had always been there, literally on top of me, but I hadn't been able to perceive it. Now I struggled forward, pushing, fighting with my arms. No, I thought. I'm not a stone. I'm not even a bonfire. I'm a star. My essence, my soul, exploded with light, burning away the haze that surrounded me. No longer was I nothing in this place. I was a light, a glowing presence, a sphere of burning whiteness. I used my ability to connect, to see, and sensed a presence ahead. It was easy now that I'd escaped. Was that Jorgen? I latched onto it and pulled myself through.
I appeared in the somewhere, as I had before. Illusory, ephemeral. But I hadn't found Jorgen. I'd found my enemies. To my human eyes, Winzik looked virtually identical to Nuluba, though his exoskeleton was a deeper green. Varvax didn't usually wear clothing, but he had on an officialish sash. He sat in a large marble chair, carved intricately and inlaid with silver. I supposed that if one had an exoskeleton, cushioned seating wouldn't be relevant. The room was circular, lavishly paneled in wood, and had the feel of an office. A group of Tenasai, with the same predatory air as Peg, was making a presentation to Winzik. They did wear clothing, and I recognized a military uniform instantly. Some things seemed pretty universal across species, and judging by the ranks of medals and badges on their jackets, these were admirals and generals. A military briefing for the acting leader of the superiority, I supposed. The screen, fortunately, didn't show detritus, but an unfamiliar planet, red and green. I couldn't read any of the writing around it, and didn't have my pin to translate, so I couldn't figure out what it was. "It's Redon," a voice said in English from behind me. "Funny you wouldn't recognize it, considering the face you wore most of the time you were with us." I spun. Braid sat in a chair beside me. She wore her dark hair in a sharp buzz cut. And even through the uniform, I could see she had muscles, the kind of build you rarely saw outside the more fanatical soldiers at the gym. She was spinning a pen between her fingers, watching me with an almost uninterested stare. Winzik turned in his seat to glance back at her, barking an order in a language I didn't know. "Oh, stuff your complaints, Winzik," Braid said, still spinning the pencil. "She's here. Finally broke out of her cage. Took you long enough, Alanik, or Spensa, I guess. I expected you to make more noise inside that barrier. Do you know how much attention it required to keep it up?" "How?" I demanded. "How did you manage that?" "Took a little instruction from our new friends," Braid said. She could see me, I realized, without a reflective surface. "Unlocked a few abilities I'd been practicing." Winzik ordered the generals out and walked over, exoskeleton hands making circular motions as he spoke. Despite the language barrier, I could recognize his mannerisms. In fact, I could practically hear him saying, "my, my," and "how aggressive" in his persnickety tone. "The Delvers think they can handle you," Braid said. "I told them otherwise." "You're blunt, Spensa. I like that about you. No subtlety. You just go crashing through whatever stands between you and your goals." "I was subtle enough to fool you," I snapped, projecting the thoughts at her. And with my growing powers, I caught a flutter of emotions she tried to hide. Shame. Anger. She had trained with me and had never figured out what I really was until I'd handed her the truth for her to stomp on. Scud, I'd been so naive. Winzik was saying something else. I wished I could figure out what it was. "He wants me to trap your mind," Braid said. "I'm not sure I can do it. The people I've been practicing on are far weaker than you. I won't flinch this time, though." Her mind slammed into mine, crushing against me. I immediately felt like I was in a box that was shrinking. I lashed out, panicked, furious. I summoned my anger, as I had last time we'd clashed, and I threw it at her. As she'd warned, Braid didn't waver. She was expecting my counterattack. So I started to glow. I stoked what was inside me, the powerful light, the brilliance that was my soul. I felt Braid's surprise, though she didn't want to project the emotion. She was shocked. She thought I was like a Delver in ways that frightened her. And something else heard. "I see you." The voice was distant, but loud. A cytonic shout vibrated through me, then something slammed into Braid, making her gasp and lose her focus. It was raw, this voice, as if untrained. If I was a sword, it was a bludgeon, a big one. I flared with light and broke through Braid's box, and together with the new voice, we shoved her back,
then escaped into the nowhere. I was chased by that extremely loud voice. It had saved me, but it seemed a monster of some sort. I spun toward it, not wanting to put my back to it as it crashed into me and hugged me? Jorgen? I thought.
Where have you been? He thought at me. Why haven't you contacted me? Spin, it's been weeks.
I tried, I said, forcing my mind to visualize him. For the moment, we floated together in the void, our essences touching, like we were two swimmers in a deep, vast, endless ocean clinging to one another. I'm sorry I didn't contact you, I said. Braid did something.
Braid?
He asked. The one who was holding me when you arrived, I said. How did you find me?
I've been practicing, he explained. I can't hyperjump, no matter how hard I try. But Alanique says that's not uncommon. Cytonics have different specialties. She says I can learn hyperjumping, that every one of us can technically learn every talent. But for some of us, there are individual talents that are very difficult. We all have weaknesses and strengths.
Wait, I said, Alanique?
It's complicated, he said. We're holding out, trying to gather help. But tell me about you. Spensa, you're glowing, like a star. I could see you even from a distance.
I've been practicing too, I said.
Are you a pirate queen yet?
He said it with such fondness. There were so many images wrapped up in what he'd said. This communication had much more depth than ordinary words. For example, I knew instantly that he was joking, but also a little serious. He loved my love of stories. He imagined me in one of those stories and was completely confident in me, more confident than I was of myself. Saints, that was so good to hear, so good to know. His picture of me was of someone courageous, resourceful, and inspiring. That was not what I deserved for how I'd treated him in our first weeks knowing each other. Fortunately, I could also feel Jorgen responding to my own picture of him. Upright, honest, caring. A leader, the best one I'd known. The moment was as perfect a one as I'd ever felt. The two of us sharing our idealized versions of one another, knowing we could never live up to them, yet knowing it didn't matter. Because by simply being near one another, we resonated and became a little more, a little better, for the knowledge, support, and trust. Then it was ruined as eyes started to appear around us. Bright white holes, the attention of the Delvers. It wasn't my glow that attracted them. It was Jorgen. Scud. He was loud. Go, Jorgen, I said as the eyes surrounded us. I'll contact you later, once their attention dies down. I felt his essence brush mine. I felt his affection, his passion. But then he was gone. I turned to face the Delvers. I kept thinking that with effort, I could get through to them. After all, Chet had explained they were all the same individual, not a group mind, but somehow all identical. So if I'd been able to change the mind of one, shouldn't I be able to do the same for the others? I'd failed at this before, but I had to try again. After all, it had taken 3 attempts to get a ship. So, as the eyes surrounded me, I tried to project a sensation of smallness. I tried to shrink us all down, to narrow our perspective. As their minds touched mine, I tried to show them. Infinity went both ways. We could be as expansive as a universe, but we could be as small as a mote. I showed them what I saw. Maxime, with his goofy smile and ready, welcoming manner. Shiver, who did so well understanding people who were very different from her. Naluba, who so desperately wanted to make up for the ways the superiority had wronged the peoples of the galaxy. See us, I told them. See that we are alive. We know, they sent back. Oh, we know. They just didn't care. In that moment, I saw things as they did. Yes, they had initially refused to accept that all the noises in the somewhere were alive. Then I'd changed one of them. When I'd done that, the rest had responded against what I'd done. In a way, it didn't matter which one of them I'd changed, because as soon as I'd done it, the others had put up defenses. Like how you might get off one sniper shot at people in a group, but then the rest would duck for cover. I would never persuade another Delver, not like I'd done before. Because now they hated us even more, knowing we were alive. Because now we weren't just random annoyances, we were intentionally trying to bring them pain. We were dangerous. We needed to be exterminated. The horror of that idea made me flee from before them, and I was getting good at hiding. I pretended to fade away, to sleep, but then quested out with my ever-strengthening ability to listen. I thought I'd heard something back there and was rewarded with a voice.
"My, my," Braid said to the Delvers, sending Winzik's words into the nowhere. "Was that painful? You see, she is too difficult to control. They all are. You saw how another came? They are multiplying, getting louder." That referred to Jorgen and the noise he'd made in rescuing me. Oh, scud. I felt the Delvers mull over his words, and I remembered what Braid had said. She'd wanted me to be loud as I tried to break through the dampening she'd put.